Go loud.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in the ground. Fill your body up in. Work it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Are you still sitting on a beanbag and you're simply like a 17?
Grow up and head to Roy Stoyle Furniture. They've got proper, comfy, stylish gear and they're Irish and family run too.
The house packages are class. For just €3,649, you get an electric sofa set, full dining setup, and beds with mattresses. That's a serious bang for your buck.
I got my corner sofa off them, and I haven't stood up since.
They've got locations in Fonthill, Belgard, and now Omni Park, open every day and late on a Thursday and Friday in Fonthill and Omni.
One-stop shop for kitting out the gaff. Don't say we never looked after you.
Exactly. Right price, right style, right now. Visit www.roystyle.ie and use promo code GET10 for 10% off.
Just a little more. Throw your whip in the ground. Fill your body up tight.
Episode 220 of the Talking Bollocks. Oh, I haven't done one of these in ages. Of the Talking Bollocks podcast brought to you by Go Loud. It's me, Terry Flower.
It's me, COB.
And this week we're joined by...
Helen Hall.
Helen. First of all, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Can you explain to us off the bat, just at the very start, why you're here and what your role is?
Okay, I'm Chief Executive of the Policing and Community Safety Authority. So it's a new agency, but it didn't come from nothing. We were created just there in April, but it was a merger of two bodies. And our job is really to keep an eye on what the guards do on behalf of the public, if you take it in simple terms. There was a policing authority for the last 7 or 8 years, but there was also, I don't know whether you heard of the Garda Síochána Inspectorate, who went out to inspect what the guards do. We've been merged into one body, and that's the Policing Community Safety Authority. So a new body, merger of two quangos, if you like, so that the functions now are together. The reason I wanted to come in and chat to you today was we have a consultation going on at the moment, and one of our jobs is to decide what should be the priorities for the guards. And we've a public consultation. It's a really quick survey. You've done it yourselves, and thanks a million for doing it. Anybody over the age of 16 can do it. It's anonymous. And you get 70 points to spend on 24 different areas of policing. And you basically put yourself in the shoes as if you were the Garda commissioner and deciding, well, should it be 0 or should it be 5 that you spend on different areas of policing? And that'll help us to establish these policing priorities.
How much power do yous have in terms of, let's say, yous find issues and yous go back to the Garda? Do yous have any power there? Do yous just have suggestions for them?
I would say, look, power is a funny word. I would say we
influence.
We have a fair bit. No, but I think power is a good thing. But I don't think you could say, well, we can make them do it legally. You know, enforce things in the same way as a guard can imprison you. It's not that sort of power. But we have an influence, and that's a nice word. So essentially, we do our work in public. We ask questions. We're not police officers. The members of the authority are from a range of different areas. And they can ask questions of the Garda Commissioner in public. It's streamed live. Every second meeting we have monthly meetings. It's streamed live. And I suppose the idea is that we ask questions on behalf of the public of what way the guards are policing. And if we've questions now... If we go out and do an inspection and we make recommendations, we then can follow up, like, what did you do about that? It's kind of a public asking of questions, which tends to get things changing more slowly, but sometimes it can be quite effective in influencing.
I was going to say, like, is that, like, have you always got, like, a success rate going on, like, of how
no,
many
I wish,
there was a push?
To... Yeah, I wish we had. No, I mean, some people would say, oh, God, there's hundreds and thousands of recommendations that we made about the guards over decades. So... No, we don't have a success rate, but we do, I suppose we're persistent is the one thing I'd say. Like, you know the way sometimes you'd say something hits the news and it's all over the news for 4 days and then everyone forgets about it. This is our only job. So we'll keep coming back and asking questions until it gets done, especially if we think it's something important. Like, I'll give you an example. When the riots happened in Dublin City there in November 2023, we were asked to do a review of public order policing. And there have been recommendations, if you talk about the success rate stuff, there have been recommendations sitting out there since 2019 about the guards changing the way they did public order policing. And by us doing that review, and we had it at nearly every meeting throughout 2024, we got them to invest more in equipment for guards. There was increased training, and those things actually happened just by asking the question. You know yourself, if somebody says to you, I'm going to ask you the question, and I'm going to ask you next week as well, Terry, and I'm going to ask you the following week, you say, Jeannie Mac, I'm just going to do it. So there is that element of that persistent questioning that can help. I think with the new body, I would like an ambition to have that. I like that idea, that sort of success rate, right? You know, there's 100 recs. How many have you implemented?
Yeah.
You know, so going forward, I'd like it, but we don't have it yet.
Yeah. Especially since though, you said it's going to be a monthly meeting that you're going to have.
Yeah.
So should you not be able to revisit? So this is what we talked about last month.
That's exactly
how you're getting
what
on
do.
With that.
Yeah.
And now this is this month's for going forward. Yeah. And then you just come back and be like, right, well, you didn't, you should be able to put like a score on it. Say, like, we wanted to target more road safety crimes or whatever.
And I suppose, and that is the idea. You can say, well, actually, you gave us that, you gave us that answer 3 months ago, and what's changed? So, yeah, you can have that persistence. I suppose the temptation is sometimes to try and do too many things.
Yeah.
So, like, we might be talking about, like, we've our first meeting in public now, actually, this Thursday. And it's in Dublin, and it's in the Gresham. And people can actually, they can listen into it, or they can attend the meeting as well. But like, we have things on that which is about community policing and how the guards police children. We could be talking something different next month. So the important thing is to kind of pick one or two topics and not spread ourselves too thin and keep asking about that. So we had children on the agenda last month and we have it again this month. So it's trying to have that persistent, because sometimes people think policing children, and you probably know this yourselves, but like, anybody under 18 is a child. So sometimes, you know, it's about having that consistent approach. And certainly from what we've heard, say from talking to youth groups who deal with young people, children can be dealt with by the guards as witnesses, as victims, but as suspected offenders. And sometimes they're not exactly treated like they should be. As children, you know, people say, oh, he's 17, he's a man. He's not actually, he's still a child. And he still needs to be treated with respect and vulnerability the same way as if he was a kid. So there's some topics like that that we can kind of keep asking about persistently in order to get the answers and just keep going until we get the change we want. I think a more effective thing, though, is if you can get the organisation itself to come to a realisation that they need to do something. I think as humans, we react better if we decide we're going to do it ourselves. You know, rather than being pushed and that. But I suppose it is our job to make sure things happen.
And how do the Garda find this whole situation? When you go to them, did he meet us with, like, how do they even more to
how do they receive the criticism?
Yeah, how do they receive it? Like, do they take it well or are they on the back foot?
I think, I've worked in like sort of regulation or oversight for a couple of decades at this stage. Now, I'm showing my age, but I don't think any of us like to be told what to do. So when we started this as the policing authority back in 2016, there was kind of, I remember the first year and we were supposed to have this meeting in public, going, you're meeting in public this year? I'm going, yeah, that's what the law says. So there was a bit of surprise that we were getting at it so quickly. I think the guards at this stage are used to it. I think one of the issues is, though, the frontline guard in the street hasn't a clue who the policing community safety authority or the old policing authority is. They're saying, are you GSOC? Are you? So there's a bit of confusion even about. But at a national level, the guard, the commissioner and the senior guards would be aware and are very receptive and open in general. But I suppose it does come back to, is it just somebody saying, oh, yeah, we'll do that? Or is it really effective change? And that's what I think, that's the advantage of coming at it every month and saying, you know, what's happened now? So I wouldn't say that. I think it's been relatively positive.
Helen, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, the very first thing I asked when you were put forward to be a guest on the podcast was, is that GSOC as well?
Yeah.
The very first thing I asked.
Even my family go, what is it you do anyway, you know?
Yeah.
Or my dad, God rest his soul, he used to say, you know, another quango. Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I actually, of course, I would say this. I think what we do is important, because the guards have such a lot of power over all of us. Like, you can be imprisoned and that's the power that we give them. So it is really important to have somebody who's not a police officer looking at what the guards do on our behalf.
I couldn't agree more with you.
The struggle, though, and I wish I'd known about G during COVID, the struggle I have, though, at times is, who are we asking and who are we listening to? And, you know, a lot of the people who actually experience or rub up against the guards are not necessarily the people on the authority. Do you know, like, so it's trying to get that voice or that representation. And we did try that a lot. We issued 16 reports during COVID, and it was quite a simple question we were asking. It's like, how are you experiencing policing? because we had all these regulations coming in telling us we had to stay inside our houses, people couldn't go. And at the beginning, it was grand, like everything was good. But then as time went on, we could see that actually some people were being treated differently. And if you were a certain age or from a certain part of town, you maybe weren't getting the same policing as if you were, you know, a middle-aged woman walking down the street, you know.
I don't think that was just COVID.
Yeah, no, probably
but
not.
But COVID
probably
gave them the authority.
Yeah, and at the beginning, it was actually, I think it was really good. And some communities said, God, we're all being restricted now. And then, but as I went on a year or two, if I thought there was one thing I could change, you know, I'd love if we knew who we were policing. We don't really keep records in Ireland as to who we're policing. And yet, if you look at the prison system, you know, there's a huge majority of it's young men from socially deprived areas or from the traveller community, you know, that are there. And then you say, well, who are we policing? Because that's the, we don't know. We don't know. We don't have that sort of statistics on that. And then it's very difficult, I think, to know, is it fair? So if we wanted to change something, that'd be something I'd like to change. Just a little more.
Talking Bollocks is coming to the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre on July the 11th.
For our biggest show ever.
On July 11th, we're putting on a show with big name guests, live music and a lot more chaos and crack.
This is the biggest show that we've ever done.
A massive stage, a room full of fancy seats, maybe even the fella in a suit telling people to turn their phones off.
The two lads in the big theatre.
It's going to be an unforgettable night of laughs and music.
Tickets are flying now, so get yours quick before they're gone. Go to Ticketmaster now to secure your seat.
It's Talking Bollocks Live at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre on July the 11th. Big theatre, big laugh, big loads of bollocks. Helen, you said in April you've merged two bodies together for this. What was the need to merge the two?
There was a big, you know, like with a lot of things in Ireland in policy, there's a scandal. I don't know whether you remember back to 2016, 2017 when there was the breath test scandal, when all the penalty points were, well, that we were part of the work on that.
Do you know about this?
No.
Yeah. Do you want to just
there
give
was
it?
A, yeah, there was essentially breath tests were recorded, but they actually weren't taking place. And they worked it out because of the breathalyzers. They hadn't looked for enough stock of them. So they couldn't possibly have done the number of breath tests.
But it was just a checkbox to say, oh yeah, we have committed that amount of breathalyzer tests. Say you have to do like 1,000 a month.
Yeah.
And they weren't.
They weren't doing them. They hadn't actually.
But there was 1,000 going through. And then they'd be like, but you only had 200 breathalyzers.
So how could you have done it? So it was,
So it was a big scandal.
So that what happened was the government decided that they should have a commission on the future policing. And it was to start with a clean slate. And part of that was to say, well, you know, there should be less bodies. So you merge the inspectorate and ourselves into one body. And we focus just on the oversight of policing, which I think is a good thing, actually. I think it's good to have, because we were created after, do you remember when the Commissioner Callaghan resigned over the Maurice McCabe stuff?
Yeah.
That was back in 2014.
Yeah.
There was a scandal and we were created in 2015. GSOC and the Inspectorate were created because, and you probably weren't even born at that stage, the Morris Tribunal in Donegal. Do you remember so that was where there was evidence taken and it was evidence fabricated and that was a big scandal. So GSOC, that was back in 2006 or 2007 that they were created. So
was GSOC around that long?
GSOC was created, I think, in 2007.
But now they don't investigate anymore, don't they? No?
They do. They're still there. They got renamed under this reorganization. So they're now called FISTRU. So it's and they've been given more powers.
But there's independent bodies in there now as well, isn't there?
They're an independent body and then there's us, right? So what if you try to kind of say, well, what's the difference, right? So if there's something wrong with the organization, the Garda Síochána, and what they're doing, that's for us to look at. And we go out and do inspections in Garda stations and say, well, what were you investigating homicides? What were you answering your 999 calls? That's us. But if I'm Garda Hall and I've done something and somebody's making a complaint against me, that goes to GSOC, which is now called FISTRU, the Irish for Inquiry.
And is GSOC fully independent?
Yep.
Was it always fully independent?
Yep. Oh, it has its own vote.
Oh, I don't know about that, Helen.
Do you not?
No. Well, from personal experience.
Yeah. Tell me, yeah.
Tell you. So yeah. I've had a, what would you say, I've experienced Garda committing malpractice.
Yeah.
And I put a complaint in with GSOC.
Yeah.
And how the process goes is you fill in the complaint, you can do it online.
Yeah.
And that goes off to GSOC. They come back to you and say, we think
there's a
what happened to you is warranted the foreign investigation.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, great. Who am I speaking to? Oh, I'm a superintendent from another garda station.
Oh, so, I know what you mean now. Yeah, because they still get to do that. So they get to decide whether something is, I suppose, so significant that they investigate it independently themselves, or they can refer it back to the guards to investigate it. So there's a combined.
So I thought the new thing was, no, you're not going to have guards investigating guards. We're an independent body who will investigate the guards.
I think now my understanding is that it would depend, and that, you see, sometimes a lot of complaints that come in might be things like, you know, somebody was very rude. That's management. That's like, come on, cop yourself on and apologize. So that's what I'd call performance management. Whereas if it's a case that somebody has assaulted somebody, you know, that's something that should be independently. Or if somebody's involved in stealing drugs and they're in the police service, that's something that should be independently investigated. So I think they can still do that kind of referral of what they'd consider lower. Now, I don't know enough about the new law as it goes with FISRU, but I think they can still do what you're describing and refer it back to the organisation to investigate. That being said, they should have somebody independent of the guard within, you know, because it's such a big organisation.
Mm.
You could have somebody, I don't know, from Wexford investigating a guard in Leash, for example, and they wouldn't know them because it's like there's 18,000 people in the organisation.
Yeah, but it's still a guard investigating a guard. Yep. There's still that kind of camaraderie there that you don't want to throw your fellow guard under a bus.
They've done it though. There's a lot of guards now. I mean, I think the culture has changed, because if you look at some of the cases that are even going through the courts now, like there's guards going, and thankfully, like, it is the minority of them, but there are guards now going through the courts for things like drink driving. There's a couple of them in prison now. That is a big change, and that they've been investigated by their own.
Yeah, but would that not just, that's a guard committing a crime.
Yeah.
Like, that's, anyone should be put before the judge for drink driving, in my opinion. But if you're abusing your power, like if you went, let's say you worked for an airline and every time your husband got on, you were like, oh, don't mind that, I'll put you in first class. I'd be that's an abuse of power.
Yeah.
She shouldn't be allowed to do that. But if a guard is coming in and being like, oh, I'm going to search this fella because I feel like searching him, I don't like the look of him, I'm just going to search him, I don't need probable cause. That's an abuse of power.
Yeah, yeah.
So that, to me, shouldn't warrant another guard looking at him and being like, oh, look, we investigated him. That should be an independent body looking at him and saying, you're abusing your power. That's well without your role and responsibility there. That's not how we want to run this organisation.
Yeah, and I think everything does get referred now to, I think all incidents of concern go to FISRU, but I do think that they can refer some of them back.
I'd like to see what the line is.
It's only brand new now, but... But I think they still will have the ability to refer stuff.
Like, I get it. When you said, if someone said, oh, that guard was rude to me.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need an independent body to come in and be like, say please and thanks.
I think it depends. And so, case by case. So,
anyways, we had to jump a bit far ahead.
No, you're grand.
So, can we take it back a little bit?
Yeah.
Will you tell us where you're from? What was life like growing up for you?
Right. I'm from Enniscorthy in Wexford. Born in 1970, so I'm in my mid-50s. I'm one of the middle-aged women who the guards, I hopefully don't bother. I'm one of five kids, the only girl, so I'm the boss. In the middle of two brothers older than me and two brothers younger than me. So I suppose growing up in the 70s in a small town, I would say I had a very privileged upbringing. Both my parents were working in the 70s, and in our town, it was a poor enough town that was pretty much you were rich if your parents were working. You know, there's a lot of friends of mine in school whose dads had been gone for like 8 months of the year working sites in England and that. And so privileged background, I'd say. Both my parents would have finished school. They wouldn't have gone to college. Well, my mum did, really. She was a teacher. So they definitely kind of prized education. So we wouldn't have had tons of money because there was, I suppose, five of us and two grandmothers in the house. But we would have been what I'd call well off and privileged, you know. So I was a bit of a swat in school. Did my leave and cert, but you know, PAYE workers, it wasn't easy to go to college then. I was third child, so I got a chance at college being paid for. So I joined Price Waterhouse. It's an accounting firm from secondary school, and they paid for me to go to college for 2 years. And then I studied by night to become an accountant. I hated accountancy. So I'm not quite sure. I did it for a free education, I suppose. I remember when I was choosing my leave and cert subjects, the only reason I did accounting was because they didn't do physics. I was in an all-girls school and there was only two of us wanted to do physics. So I ended up with accountancy. So there we are. So I've been trying to get out of it ever since.
Yeah.
So did that, signed a contract when I was 18 to do 6 years with PW. So 2 years of free college and then 4 years of indentured slavery to pay back what they had put me through. So as soon as I finished training as an accountant, I suppose I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to stay in Big Four practice. So I decided to go off and volunteer for 2 years. So I went to Malawi. And you might say, where? Because I said, where was that? My geography has never been my strong point. So I remember going into APSO. It was the, again, probably before your time, APSO, the Agency for Personal Service Overseas, no? It was like the VSO or the Peace Corps in Ireland, right? So it was volunteers. And I remember going in and saying, is Malawi, like, where is that? Is it in Africa or Asia? I didn't even know. So it's in Africa. It's a small country, but the size of Ireland. So I went there. I said, I didn't even think they'd take accountants as volunteers. I thought it was just nurses and teachers. So I went out there for 2 years and then kind of got led astray and stayed there for 9 years. And my son was born there.
9 years?
Yeah. So I went out as a volunteer and then I met my now ex-husband, but I met him, fell madly in love and decided I was going to stay. Broke my mother's heart. Only girl. And I just looked for other work to be able to stay there. So I did a year with the World Bank, and then I worked with Deloitte out there for a couple of years. And then I came back to Ireland, but kind of a little bit of a circuitous route. I worked for a couple of years in Rome with the UN in oversight. So I was doing a lot of work in the sort of Middle East, and then came back to Ireland just because my mother kept putting the Irish Times in front of me with jobs to try and get me home. And I, so this is a kind of a whistle stop tour, but they were setting up a new agency, a government agency overseeing accountants and auditors. And so I did that for 10 years. It was with IASA out in Nace, but it was looking at what the Big Four were doing and what the accounting firms were doing and looking at complaints about accountants and auditors. So it was oversight, if you like. So when the policing authority advertised the job, I said, well, I don't know anything about policing, but I know a lot about oversight. And so that's how I applied for the job. So that's how I got into policing oversight.
Brilliant.
There's a whistle stop tour.
Yeah. No, because I was sitting here very confused because you spoke about having a privileged childhood and then now you're doing oversight for the Garda. And it was like, I was expecting you to say you had a bad experience with the Garda and you were like, no.
No, and in fact, my younger brother's a guard. Yeah, but right. My brothers would say that I'm a soft touch, bleeding heart. Like, what do you do now? You know, but I just think that, you know, with power there comes a lot of responsibility, right? And I think I look at even when I was an accountant, I didn't really want to stay in the rat race of the Big Four and all of that. It was about the regulation of it and how, what if accountants are not behaving themselves? We saw some certain things in the banking crisis, and making sure that there was standards of behavior that people could be held to account for it was where my head, I suppose, always went. And so then the next step is naturally like, well, the police have significant power over us and it's important to have somebody looking at it and asking simple questions like, you know, and if you look at the policing authority, there are 9 people who will ask questions of the guards. And my job, I suppose, is to give them that information. But they can ask very simple questions, you know, but they can be powerful. And to see how that service, and I'm passionate about the word, actually. People say, oh, police force. In law, it's a police service. It's a service to us.
Yeah, exactly.
And we should demand that service. They're public servants.
Yeah.
And I suppose the oversight bit of it becomes really, really important. So no, I didn't have a bad experience from the cards at all.
I don't know why I went.
I know.
Just when I initially met you, I was like, something must have happened years ago.
Maybe nothing. It is, Jim. We have an hour to talk about it. Might get it out of me eventually.
It's a banner in the works. This might be a bit personal. Tell us the fuck off, Yash, and that you don't want to answer. What does your brother think of you in this role?
Oh, he loves winding me up, like. You know, we don't talk about it over Christmas dinner, shall I say. We try and, you know...
No shop talk.
No, well, yeah, and my sister-in-law's a guard as well.
For fuck's sake.
Sometimes they will try to wind me up, you know, and say, oh, it's not the same as it used to be now with all this oversight.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, but yeah, no, I wouldn't have anything directly, you know, shall we say, myself and Michael wouldn't really rub up against each other work-wise, but he's not surprised I'm doing what I'm doing, put it that way. He knows me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said that you're seeing the advertisement for this job and you went for it and you took it straight away. Did you know that you would be as passionate about it as you are now, or did you just see it as another job that you might enjoy?
I think, I, you know, it's funny, when I saw the ad, I thought, wow, that would be a really, you know, a really cool job. That'd be really good. But I suppose I didn't think I'd get it. So when I look at different jobs I've done, because I've hopped around a lot, my mother used to say, will you stick at something for more than a year? I get bored quite easily. And I've been at this now for 9 years and there's not a day that's boring, like, because it's different all of the time. There's new challenges. And there's new challenges for guards as well. Like, I mean, they do a really hard job on our behalf. So I have a lot of respect for the job itself, but it changes an awful lot. You look at what you were, a guard was expected to do maybe 20 years ago, and it might have been, you know, might have been a burglary. Now you're looking at, if you have a kid in your house, you don't know that they're safe within the house because there's cybercrime. There's somebody coming in. They might be getting into your house through your child's phone, through all sorts of different ways. Or, you know, so crime has changed a lot. So you're never bored. Probably didn't think I was going to be. It's a really good question. I don't think I could have anticipated that I would have been as passionate about it. But yeah, I love it. Yeah. I hope we make a difference. And I think that's
what. Well, I was going to say that. That was going to be my follow-up there, was maybe after some success, yeah, you're probably going, oh my God, we're making a real change here. Because I think it's something that's, said that at the start of the episode, I think it's something that's really important, the job that you're doing. Like, it's so important. And I think people that come from areas like ours will understand the importance of what you do more so than maybe somebody who's not from a working class area. Or
I wish, area. You know, I don't know where, if we're making that big a difference. I'd hope we are, but I think that persistence, going back to that, is the important bit, to continue to ask questions, but also to not assume that the job is ever going to be done. Do you know, because it's constantly changing.
There's no finish line.
No, and it's kind of, you might, it's like a little bit like whack-a-mole. Like, you know, you might say, okay, well, I think that bit's working now. And like any organization, and then you say, but what's happening over there? And it goes back even to the priorities that we were talking about earlier. Like, if you, it's a bit like your own household budget or your own money. You don't have unlimited money. So you've got to make choices. See, the guards can't spend their time on everything, and it's vast. And we can't afford to put our tax money. We can't afford to triple the size of the guards. And even if you did, you'd still have more to do. So it is a question of, well, what's the most important, and focusing on that. I'd like to believe that we were making a difference, but I think there's a lot more for us to do as well, particularly in terms of cracking that notion of listening to people and getting voices that are sometimes not heard in Irish society. I think there's going back to what you're saying about people in working class areas, and we do try, but I think there's a lot more we can do as well. I'd hope we'd do it in the next few years.
I'm not even talking about what you are getting done. It's I think it's the effort and the oversight is essential.
Yeah.
You know, and like I just said there, speaking as a young lad from the north in a city in Dublin, you know, there's so many young lads that go around, they wear the tracksuit and they talk a certain way. And they're in a bit of trouble off the bat.
Yeah, there's assumptions made. And, you know, it's funny because my son is mixed race. And it's interesting, when he was younger and you talk about accent. I listened to one of your early episodes, and I think it was the two of you had been in a shop somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about somebody taking their bag. And I remember that when my young lad was like 10 and he'd walk into a shop and a security guard would follow him around. And I thought, you know, and you just think that's so unfair. And we make assumptions. And I think we, in the broadest sense, the public service can make assumptions about people depending on how they look or how they speak. And so that fairness bit is huge. It's huge for me. And it goes back then to, do we know who we're policing? Like, are there more young fellows from where you were from who would attract attention from the police service and would then end up in trouble?
I've seen it a million times in my life. Like, and not just with me, which there has been many with me, but where one of the lads would be walking down the road and they'd be pulled. And because they're pulled, then they're after getting pointed out by the guard for no reason, then there's a bit of back and forth between them, and then he ends up in the back of the guard car.
Yeah.
It didn't even have to happen. It's just pulled because of what way he was dressed or whatever.
Yeah.
And what area he was in.
We've heard it as well, and it's not just in relation to guards, but say just even young kids going to secondary school and they're coming and they're just dressed a certain way, or the certain, you know, tracksuits on or whatever, and it's almost assumed that they're up to no good. We saw it during COVID, and I could actually see it, my own dad. Like, he was a devil, he'd say, don't like those hoodies. Like, my son would be wearing a hoodie. So, don't like those hoodies. What are you? I said, Grandad, everyone wears hoodies, you know? And as an older person, he was afraid. And this, we're in a village now. We're in a rural village. And my dad would feel, and he was a big, tall man, and he would feel intimidated by two or three young lads with hoodies on, and they'd be friends of my son. And it's just, it's all about that perception, which isn't fair.
Mm. But then what would feed the perception is if your dad seen them three lads getting pulled by the police.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, well, that just comes from Irons. Yeah, that confirms that.
Right. Yeah,
They're troublemakers.
Yeah.
But they just got to stop for what they are wearing. Helen, can you just break down basically how this process works? So every month you are going to meet with, is it a Garda commissioner?
So I suppose if I break it down, the job we're doing at the minute is setting priorities. So based on that, then we will look at the plan that the guards make for this year. And it's kind of what their commitment to the public is. And so every month we get a report from the commissioner and we look at what they're saying they've done about certain things in their plan. You know, so for example, they might say that they're going to, you know, improve the equipment if we take public order for example. And we'll say, well, you know, what's the change on that? But we don't just take it from written reports. We will go out and go into Garda station and say, well, can you show us a bit of that? Or can we see what you've done on this and that? So it is about getting out and about as well.
And do you always have the right to do that? Sorry if I couldn't have lost you. Do you always have the right to just go into Garda stations and look?
Yeah, well, I suppose we've got, the way the law is now is that we have the right to any information that the guards have. And with our inspection powers now, it includes unannounced inspections.
Right.
So, yeah, we can go. And look, some of it isn't, it's never had to be, you asked a question earlier on, like how do the guards react to us? It's never been that we've had to force our way to do anything. It's very much been, look, you know, we need to look at this and that. And we've been very much accommodated, I would say. But if we weren't, we would have the right to require it, if you like. We haven't had to do that yet.
That's probably why they're cooperative, though. Because you could still, you still have the right to anyways.
Yeah.
Not making any assumptions, I'm just saying. Yeah. It makes sense to be cooperative.
It does. Just a little more.
So Helen, you were explaining there, so every month you meet with, is it the Garda Commissioner?
Yeah. So what the law says is that the authority, now it doesn't say how many times, we've decided we're going to do it every month, apart from August, I think is the only month we don't meet them. So the authority meets with the Commissioner and his senior team, so 7 or 8 of them every month. And every second month we do that live, we stream it live of our kind of YouTube channel, and you can listen back to the meetings as well. And I suppose the idea is so that the public get a chance to actually see that oversight happening live. And it's a mixture of topics. We'd have a plan for the year of things we're going to try and cover and try and make progress on. And then that'll form the agenda for the guards. And so, like, as I said, our first meeting now is on Thursday this week. And that one will be in public. The next one will be private. And then the one after that in public. But if you go back to even the priorities that we were talking about and setting those priorities, we're trying to involve the public in that and to make the choices of what areas of policing that the guards should spend time on. And that allows us then to say, right, this is your plan for the year. They include that in that. And that's what we would talk to them about in those monthly meetings. But it's not just that, like we've a team of people then going out and inspecting what the guards do, and reports on that would come back to the authority and they'll say, wait a second now, what have you done about X, Y, or Z? Those reports will be published as well. So we have done as the policing authority and now going forward as the policing and community safety authority. All of our minutes are published, people can look at them on our website, and then our meetings are streamed every second month or streamed live.
Is the Minister for Justice involved in this?
The Minister for Justice would have appointed the authority. So we're an independent agency, but I suppose we're funded by the taxpayer, you know, to do this. So it's under legislation that's created by the Oireachtas, but it would be the Minister of Justice who'd be the person who'd have developed it, if you like.
And who actually decides what questions you ask on a monthly basis?
Essentially the authority members themselves. So there's 9 of them, and there's a chairperson and 8 members. So they decide what questions they ask. But it's not like myself and my team would be doing the work in putting things on the agenda and then suggesting questions as well. But we don't give questions to the commissioner and his team in advance. You know, that's something.
So they're on the spot questions.
Yeah, and yet you don't want it to be a gotcha either. Like we talked about earlier, like I think, you know, you want it to be fair, and you get better traction, I think, even in terms of the conversation. If somebody knows, like if I think of the meeting on Thursday, right? So one of the things on the agenda is community policing. And so we would meet, myself and the chairperson, a week before the meeting, would run through, we'd meet the commissioner one-on-one and run through the agenda and say, look, these are the three topics on the agenda. Have you any questions? And the likely direction of travel. So if I take community policing, you know, we would have given a sense to the guards that, look, how does the community know your approach to policing, community policing? Because people, you hear it a lot, like there's no visibility, there's no guards around. You know, you want, people are saying, oh, we're losing touch with our local community guard. So it's getting that sense. So we'd say, well, they're the sort of questions that we might be asking of you. Ultimately, it'll be for the authority members to make the decision on what they ask live on the day. But we would have suggestions for them.
Yeah, I think the biggest concern from the public would be the mistrust with the guard, that no matter how many oversights or inquests or whatever, there's always a new scandal. There's always people see mispractice with the guard. There's no transparency. There's no accountability that if this guard does this, they are going to get punished for it, or it will deter other guards from following this practice in future. So I think this is where the hesitancy would be from the public.
I think that things have changed a lot. I think there is more accountability now. I think that if you've got a complaint about the guards, you can go to what used to be called GSOC and now is called FISRU. If the guards have made certain commitments or we're inspecting something, we will do that and we'll do it publicly. So I think there has been a lot of change. Is it perfect? No. I think one of the concerns the authority would have is it takes so long for things to get, you know, dealt with. And sometimes you might have a guard where there's a complaint against them and it can take several years for it to go through. And that's not necessarily fair on the officer as well either. So there's sort of two sides. If you're sort of accused of doing something, you do want it to be over. And, you know, justice delayed isn't necessarily fair either. I'm hoping that the changes that are brought in the current act will make a big difference to the powers that the likes of GSOC have to investigate independently. And that's the new FISRU, as I mentioned earlier. But also then the powers that we will have to do inspections, you know, and have those reports independently published and available to the public so that they'll know what's going on in the guards as well, which I think is important.
Yeah.
You know.
We touched on earlier at the start the survey.
Yeah.
So do you want to give it like kind of a crash course on what's on the survey and how it's going to work?
Yeah, sure. So essentially we're asking people, our job is to set the priorities for the guards, and we do this every 3 years. And so what we've done is we're using this, it's a simulator tool. It takes 5 minutes to do. Anybody over the age of 16 can do it. And you're essentially given 70 points to spend, if you like, across 24 areas of policing. And you're putting yourself into the shoes of the Garda Commissioner. Like, do you think something is zero, which means you don't think they should spend any time on it? Or do you think it should be 5 points? And obviously you can't give five to everything. I mean, I did it myself a few weeks ago and I had run out of money. I think we were talking about that earlier. I had run out of money by the time I got to the end of page two. So I had to go back and kind of, you know, take some points away. I'd given five to everything and I got to the end of page three and I'd nothing left. So it is about deciding what you think is important. And it ranges from things like, you know, spending time on, say, victims of crime, spending time on mental health, spending time on homicide, spending time on drugs and community policing,
road,
all of those
safety,
ranges
theft,
of it. Exactly.
There was loads in it.
Exactly. And what you think is important. And you've done it yourself, haven't you?
Yeah. We've both done it, yeah.
I thought I found it more difficult than it needed to be, because like I was saying with the point system, you know, it gives, I'd be out of points at the end and then you're thinking, right, I need to go back here and, you know, this should be more important. It actually really did get me thinking.
Yeah.
And I hope now if many people do that. But see, the thing is different areas, different guard stations, like so many different people from different areas would have so many different concerns.
Well, one of the things that's useful about it, like, is that when we get the results in, we can actually, now it's anonymous, but you can get a sense, well, you have to answer things like what age bracket you're in and, you know, what area you're from, are you rural or urban, or from what county you're from. So we get a sense of, well, actually, in Dublin, this is the primary, this is the one that's most important to people. But actually, in Kerry, they're much more, you know, and it will, you're right, it does tend to be different depending on what area you're in. What is interesting, we did this back in 2022 as well. And what I found really interesting is at the time, you know, people were saying, oh my God, you know, it's terrible, rural crime and thefts and burglary and all that. When it came down to it, a lot of people gave higher priority to things that hurt people as opposed to things, if you know what I mean by that. Like, you know, so where it was like, say, sexual abuse or assault came out at the end as being something that people felt the guards should spend more time on than necessarily burglary or vetting or something like that. So it was interesting that sometimes, you know, when people are asked, they do make the decisions. You know, you're putting yourself into the shoes. The guards have to make choices all the time about what, where they're going to spend their time. So it puts a little bit of power to people to have their say. And that's, I suppose, what we want to encourage people to do. It's still open until the 8th of June. So
yeah,
if you can give it a shout out for us, it'd be great.
And we're going to put it in the description of this episode.
Ah,
so the
brilliant.
Link to the survey will be there.
Great.
Because I think it actually can have a big effect. Doing the survey and showing.
Yeah.
Make and you can think. Speak personally, you don't.
Yeah. Like, no, it is well. Personal. It's totally personal.
It's personal. And anonymous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's personal and anonymous, yeah, which is huge. But I mean, yeah, like, you don't have to go on and go, oh, this seems to be a big topic at the minute. I bet I've. Whatever you think.
It's what you think. And then I suppose that's part of the power of it, is that you can kind of, you get a sense like of what matters to people. And that'll help us then to develop the priorities. And going back then, what you asked about, that helps us to say, well, these are the things that when we're having these monthly meetings, we should be talking about how the guards are providing a service on X.
Yeah. And exactly. That's what they are. They're like the public servants, your public facing. Your customer are the people of Ireland. Exactly. That's who you serve.
Yeah.
And I think then, going back to the accountability and the pressure from the public is what goes through then, and is what's, like, if you listen to what they're talking about in the Dáil, it's what the people are shouting for the most. So if you're putting pressure on them from the public, and month on month, people are tuning in and keeping account of, well, this is what you talked about last month, and nothing's been done about it. Yeah. And then that comes down to yous, and yous are putting that to the Garda Commissioner, and you see there's a spike in, the last time we done this survey, X amount of people did it. There's twice as many people are out there doing it now.
Yeah.
It shows that, oh, the public are actually focused on this.
Yes, they're interested.
So this is, we better actually do something about this.
No, it is important. And like, we will do it again as well. It's not a once off. Like, this is enduring. I mean, when we started off first, we used to do these priorities every year. Now we sort of said, well, look, it makes more sense to do it deeply every 3 years and just kind of say, okay, well, let's just review them every year. And that kind of works a little bit better. It allows you to kind of make, going back to what you said about, you know, can you keep account of what's changing? I think if you have a little bit longer than annual, it's a little bit easier to try and do that tracking of how things are improving in the policing service.
Yeah.
How deep can this go? So if this is the policing practice, can it go even earlier in the stages of education and training? So can it go from the Garda stations to Templemore?
Yeah, I mean, that would be part of our role, as I would see it. Like, if you take that there's something we want to focus on, if I go back even to the public order work, like, one of the things we would have looked at and one of the things you want to look at is, well, how are people trained? Because, you know, trained in Templemore, but then how is their continuous training done as well? So training's a huge part of how the police perform. And that's our job, is to see, well, what's the service that's provided to the public and how are the guards performing? And I don't think you could not look at Templemore, but it's not just the first point of training when somebody comes in. It's what happens when you go out into a station and you've been serving for a number of years. And you hear that from guards all the time, that there's all these new things coming in and they're not getting the continuous professional development. So that's something we would then be asking the commissioner about, you know, what's happening in terms of these new crimes that are coming in, and is there adequate training, you know, for the guards who've been there and who are working, you know, all the time on our behalf. So it's a balance between holding to account, but also supporting the guards as well to make sure that they've got the tools to do the job and to do the job properly.
Do you do any comparisons to foreign police?
Yeah, we would look at what people do in other areas. It's interesting, like, when you look at, say, if you look at England, they're quite different to us. They do call their police or police forces. We're a police service. Northern Ireland are a police service, and they're one service for the whole jurisdiction. Scotland is one service, whereas there's 44, I think, or 45 different police services or police forces in England. So it's not that easy to compare, but we'd look to Scotland a bit, and we'd look to Northern Ireland a bit. And you would look at particular things like how people do, you know, policing of, there's a real power to the new act, which talks about community safety. And I didn't mention this already, but it's talking about the changing and making people feel safer isn't just about policing them. It's much wider than that. So you look at a lot of what the guards are dealing with. It is, can be mental health, it can be addiction. And you're not necessarily helping by putting people into the criminal justice system for some of this. So the ambition of the new act is about agencies, government agencies working together to make people feel safer. And there's a lot of good practice in other countries on that, whereby you'll have, say, you like social workers, TUSLA, or a mental health profession being available to go out on patrol even with the police service, so that you're not immediately putting somebody, you know, who really is in a very vulnerable position, and being in a Garda station is probably the last place they should be. They probably need help in different ways, and putting somebody in ultimately in prison doesn't solve anything and doesn't make any of us any safer. So that whole area of community safety is something, going back to what you said about how that's something I'm even more passionate about, is that if we could somehow work together to catch things, you know, schools, in youth services, like you look at some of the cuts that were made back in like 2009 and 2010 with youth services being cut. We're seeing the impact of some of that now, you know, and COVID as well. We're seeing the impact of some of that now. Kids not having help, I suppose.
I think that was one of the sections on the survey was prevention, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So.
And sometimes people forget the fact that the police service have a couple of jobs. It's not just about detecting crime. It is about preventing crime. That's a big, important part of it. So that crime prevention, and it's hard to measure that. But if we start to measure just based on the number of detections, what you count is what you get sometimes. So there's this almost pressure on police officers to get detections. But actually, you know, walking down a street and chatting to people and talking, meeting people where they're at, can be just as important as a policing response in terms of prevention as detecting and bringing them into a Garda station. It can actually be much more, you know, beneficial. So, but how do you count that?
You see, there used to be, I don't think, do they still have them around, community guards?
That's part of what we want to talk about on Thursday, is what is community policing now? And, you know, yes, there are community police officers, and it is an expertise, and we hear it all over the country, and particularly also in the city. Oh, you know, if we had more community police officers. So I suppose part of the conversation we want to have with guards this week is around, well, what's your ambition for that? And that is prevention.
But I thought community guards were great. There used to be a community guard in the area I grew up in, and he was silent. And I've spoken about him on this podcast before. Yeah. I won't say his name or anything like that, but he'd come through with the flats and the lads would probably be having a joint or whatever. Yeah. And he'd just go over and he'd say, lads, just don't like the bollocks or anything, and he'd leave.
Yeah.
And he'd engage with the lads in the flats.
Yeah.
There was no hassle from him.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if some cop are just patrolling the area, comes into the flats, you know there's going to be trouble. He has to fucking move over the joint, that someone's getting nicked, and there's just hostility off the bat. I thought community guards were great.
We hear that a lot. And so that conversation is an important one that I suspect we'll be returning to throughout this kind of cycle of the service plan.
It's not saying that I'm not saying that people should be allowed to smoke joints. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't have to be the whole fucking drama.
There has to be human element.
Yeah.
And we hear that. We hear that all the time. Is that, and you see it yourself, like when somebody can have the crack with youngsters, like then you get away from that. It doesn't have to be negative, you know.
But the lads respected him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If he came in, no one was scattering and moving off.
It doesn't mean that if there's, like, it's interesting. We had some really, really powerful conversations during COVID, and it was lockdown, but particularly one that comes to mind is with a group of mothers who were, and they were from the inner city, and they were saying, I'm not saying my young lad isn't doing X, Y, or Z, but it's about the respect, and it's about how they're dealt with. And I think sometimes, I think all of us, like even if you're in school, if you feel like you're being dealt with fairly, you're not as sore about it. But if you feel like it's not fair, so I think the way something is done or the way a conversation happens makes a huge difference. And that first touch of the interaction. So we hear that a lot, that community Gardaí and, you know, juvenile liaison officers are really, really, people think they're great. Like there's an awful lot of really good, there's a powerful amount of good service being provided. And we shouldn't forget that. And yet you have to have holding to account and that public oversight to make sure that it's more consistent across the board.
I know you're saying you can't forget the good that's going on, but I think us two lads here have spoke openly on numerous occasions about all the fucking bad, that like one in every fucking 20 interactions that we've had since we were a kid has been a good interaction. So it's like, it's hard for us to sit here and go, yeah, fair play to them for all the good they do, because it's so rare that I've seen them do. That might sound dramatic, but I've seen a million things that they've done that have been out of proportion, out of control, like no remorse from them. Like,
And continue to do though.
But on to the same people in the same area over and over and on. And it's not saying that nobody deserved that or any such, but I'm even talking about assaults from the Garda. Like where they'd come in and they're all hostile and somebody would respond and a cop of bleeding hits them and puts them into a pair of handcuffs and that bend in their arm. And but I've seen this in so many times we live, so it'd be difficult for me to hear and say, well done for all the good you do.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. And one of the things that we are trying to do, or we have been trying to do, is, and I think I mentioned that earlier, that how do you hear from people that are seldom heard and their experiences? So we do try to do that. But one of the things, you know, as well, that's important, and I struggle with this sometimes, like you'll say to, we've heard it from, say, youth groups or youth workers who deal with youngsters. And I'd say, well, why don't they make a complaint? I said, there's no way they will complain.
No.
They won't complain. And so how do you get that information so that it's not just, how do you get it to a point that you can then make a change if there isn't a complaint system? That's the bit that I struggle with sometimes. Now, what we've tried to do is we'll talk to people anonymously and we produce, I don't know whether you've seen them, they probably haven't, but we describe them as what we heard. And it's like kind of a report of what we're hearing from communities, which echoes some of what you're saying. And then we do a similar one from guards who are providing the service, what we heard as well. So I'd like us to do more of that and expand that so that we can do that in a way that gets the voices out without people having to necessarily put up their hands and make complaints about it.
Yeah, but I think even touching back on the stuff we were saying about GSOC, no one's going to complain. And then when you get one person that does complain, then you realise, oh no, it's a guard investigating another guard and nothing happens with that. People are like, well, what was the point in doing that? So This is where the hesitancy comes from. And I can understand why what is the feedback numbers like on the survey?
Yeah, and it's interesting because there's a public attitude survey that the guards run, and actually the results of that are really strong.
Yeah,
you know. But
what is this?
This is a public attitude survey that the public respond to it. I suppose my question with that would be, who are we asking?
Yeah. I was going to say that.
It's something that I suppose I would like the Police and Community Safety Authority to delve a little bit more into. It's something that I'd like us to see if there's ways that we can expand the work we have been doing and trying to hear from people.
Yeah.
You know, because it is tricky. And we hear exactly that. We hear it from mothers. We hear it from community workers in certain areas that they don't feel like the treatment is fair.
Yeah.
But I see a huge change, though, in that the organization, like guards who are giving good service and trying to do the right, they want the system to be effective if somebody is doing wrong, you know, to be fair. So I think that's the big thing, is if we can get information and the transparency out there around, you know, what the public feel, and, you know, going back even to what you want people to focus on in the first place, and then, you know, how do we crack getting, like, one of the things that we did do, we now have a situation where the guards publish use. So you talked about handcuffs earlier, and that was something that in the early time of the policing authority, when the guards used force against somebody, it wasn't published. It now is. So the number of times that they use handcuffs or tasers or a gun or anything like that, that is part of the report that comes into us monthly. And that's a positive. At least you're getting that transparency.
Mm. How was that not published before, though?
I don't know.
Like, if you're putting someone in handcuffs, you're arresting them, yeah? Why would that just not be published?
I don't know. It's something that took a little bit of time now. I know one of our early authority members, Dr. Vicky Conway, the late Dr. Vicky Conway, it was something that she was passionate about, and it's certainly something that we pushed for in the early years. They, at the beginning, they said, oh, no, we don't have the information, we don't record it.
Yeah.
And we said, no, you know, it needs to be there. Now, the question is it fully reported? That's the next
thing. Yeah.
You get the report. And that's the next challenge, is to say, well, let's try and see whether we can delve into whether that makes sense. So it's a start. It's not perfect, but it's a good start, I think.
But going back to what you were saying, like, you are very clear about the differentiation between police force and police service.
Yeah.
So we have a service, it's a public service. Again, we have the numbers on how many buses showed up late, how many doctor's appointments were missed.
Yeah.
So why aren't the Garda being held to the same accountability?
Again, like, you do have information in the public domain around detections, the crimes, how they're reported. So that is there. I think the use of force is something that wasn't there. And I agree with you. I don't understand why it wouldn't have been. It is there now. So it's about, I suppose it's about saying, this is the information that needs to be publicly available. I don't know, maybe it was a culture that in Ireland of, well, this is kind of, it's private, some of this stuff was, you know, crime. It wasn't necessarily in the public domain.
And I don't mean to sound condescending about this, but I think when you interact with the guard, they should be interacting with you as a customer. You are a customer, you know what I mean? In technical terms, you know, anyone that interacts with a system is called a customer.
Yeah.
So they should interact with you, assuring that when I'm finished talking to this person, I hope they're satisfied. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be a good one. Whereas it's not like that.
And that's why, I suppose, again, going back to things that I think are, words are really important. Like, it drives me wild when I hear people saying police force in this country. Since 2005, the word in the law is police service in Ireland. And constantly, you'll listen to it now. Once you start to tune in on it, you'll hear people say the police force, you know. And it's not a police force, it's a police service. And I do think you're right. I think that's a really important distinction. And even if I go back to the conversation we're going to be having with the commissioner on Thursday around the policing service that's provided to children, and I include, say, young lads, even if they are suspected of doing, that is a service that's provided to them. How do they experience it? And I'd love us to get to the point where people are confident to say, well, actually, that service wasn't great. And here's my reaction to that service, because you as a child can, and, you know, can be a victim, you can be a witness, or you could be somebody who's suspected, and you should be respected and given that due process regardless.
Yeah, I just don't feel like it is treated as a service, though, because we know multiple guards that have strikes against their name. And I'm just thinking, in any of that line of work, if you fucked up that much, you'd be pulled in and the manager would say, look, this is where you went wrong. If this happens again, we're going to have serious conversations. But it doesn't happen again. And the account, like the knock-on effect is, if someone gets your order wrong in a restaurant, you send it back, you get your order again.
Yeah.
If someone breaks down your door because they thought your house was the one that was supplying the drugs, you have to fucking fix the front door. You have to explain to your neighbours, oh, they got the wrong house. You have to explain to your kids what's at the happening there. So the account, like the repercussions are big when the guards make a mistake, but I don't feel like on their behalf, it's like, oh, we made a mistake. Hopefully we'll get the next house, the right house tomorrow. We pull the right card in tomorrow.
I think there's a couple of things there. I think it is a service, first of all, and therefore we should be treating it like a service. And I think it's going to take a little bit of time to change our own perspectives on it, because there's probably always been culturally in Ireland a bit of a fear factor the guards are in charge. And we're you know, it's tied up with the history of the state. I do think that one of the criticisms that the policing authority would have had of the guards is that they don't have a really strong performance management system, which is what you're kind of describing there.
Yeah, right? We need a score system.
So it shouldn't be that, like, if I've made a mistake, it shouldn't be just straight to discipline. It should be like, come on, you need, you know. And so often what seems to happen is that there aren't, like, what you'd expect in most, you know, places you're working. You know, you say, all right, this is your job, this is what you're supposed to do, and if you don't, we'll have a chat about it, and this is how you can improve, and here's how I'll train you to improve better. That's something that still isn't working that well for guards. And I think, therefore, then sometimes things, there's a rush to discipline, whereas actually it could be a conversation, which would be a more effective way of getting people to provide the service. But I think that conversation about service is really, really an important one. And I'd love if we, I know you're saying you don't have confidence that if you were to complain, but that would be my hope and ambition, that if we're sitting down talking in 3 or 4 years' time, that the dial has moved a bit in that, that the confidence can be better. Like, there is a new organisation now, FISTRU, who is going to be dealing with complaints. They've been given extra powers. We've got a job to do, which can look at maybe getting more transparency around when complaints are made and what people's perspective of the service is. And I hope it will improve. Is it perfect now? No.
But. And I get it. It's a catch-22. Yeah. It's like, well, if there's no one complaining and putting pressure on them, then they won't do anything. But people won't complain and put pressure on them because they don't feel confident that anything's going to get done. So
it is, yeah. So I'd love if we could, it's moving that dial a little bit.
Yeah. I hope anyone that listens to this goes and does a survey and you'll see a spike in the numbers.
I think that'd
be great. And people say, yeah, look, this is where I think we need to be putting more resources. Not this, but here instead. And we see these numbers roll out over the next few months. We see the pressure and we see the statistics increase then.
Yeah. Great. Thank you very much.
All right. No, Helen, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. I was saying to you there a few minutes ago, you explained everything perfect. Like, I thought this was going to be all, I don't know, technical and all of it. I'm not going to get this. You explained everything perfect.
Thanks very much for having me.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
No, it's great. And hopefully we'll be coming back talking to you in a couple of years, and we'll have moved.
Yeah,
we'll have moved the ship a little bit further, you know.
Yeah, well,
I'm
hopefully
an optimist.
Yeah, glass half full.
Yeah,
right. And Nelson, we need to throw it. You happy, Terry?
Yeah,
you all good, Helen?
Yeah.
All right, take us out, Ed.
Boom.
That's us for this week. Thanks to the legends at Roy Stoyle Furniture Shop for the support.
Speaking of great support, see what I did there? Roy Stoyle has everything, and I mean everything. Sofa sorted, beds covered, dining table, six chairs, boom, all in one house package. Plus, the lads in the store are sound as well. And if you're more of an online shopper, that's no problem.
Whack in the code GET10 on roystyle.ie and take 10% off whatever you're buying. Free savings. What's not to love?
I'm telling you, don't sleep on this deal. Unless it's on one of the mattresses, in which case, fair play.
Roy Price, Roy Stoyle, right now. Visit www.roystyle.ie and use promo code GET10 for 10% off.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Till your body attend. Work it hard and low. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Cut down.